Hey all, welcome back to the Real Life Pharmacology Podcast. I am your host, Pharmacist Eric Christensen, and I thank you so much for listening today. As always, go check out reallifepharmacology.com. Go subscribe there to the email list, and we'll get you a free Top 200 Study Guide. It's a 31-page PDF. Great refresher if you're out in practice, or if you're going through pharmacology classes as a nursing student, pharmacy student, med student, definitely going to help you out a lot there. So again, go check out that resource. I've brought in a lot of clinical practice pearls, things that you see show up on board exams, as well as things that you're going to see in real life. So reallifepharmacology.com, simply an email will get you access to that. All right, so let's get into the drug of the day today. And that is denosumab. We've got a couple of brand names with this medication. So first is XGEVA, which I'm not going to talk about too much here, but that can be utilized in hypercalcemia of malignancy. Again, kind of more of a specialized use, not something you're going to see day-to-day in a primary care type setting. So I'm definitely going to focus more on Prolia. So this is primarily used for osteoporosis management. And the most common situation, at least at this point, that I see this medication utilized is in patients who cannot tolerate bisphosphonate. So let's take a drug, bisphosphonate like alendronate, for example. Maybe a patient can't tolerate it due to esophageal ulceration. Maybe they've got, you know, terrible renal function, things like that, which may prevent the use of a bisphosphonate, might be a situation where we start to look at denosumab as a potential alternative. Now, the unique thing about denosumab, well, there's a few unique things, but denosumab is a monoclonal antibody. So in most situations when we have a monoclonal antibody, it's going to be an injection, and that is the case with denosumab. And it's given twice a year, 60 milligrams, as a sub-Q injection. And it is only to be administered by healthcare professionals. Okay, so with that administration, pretty straightforward, let it warm up to room temp for 15 to 30 minutes, and then sub-Q into the upper arm, abdomen, or potentially the thigh area there as well. Now, mechanistically, how does this medication work? Like I mentioned, it's a monoclonal antibody, and it targets rank L. And this ultimately prevents activating rank. Now, rank is important in ultimately activating the production and activity of osteoclasts. So if we prevent activating rank, we can help slow down the action of osteoclasts. And if you remember from physiology, maybe basic biology, there are osteoclasts and osteoblasts. And osteoblasts, which we're not talking about here, build bone, make it stronger. And osteoclasts break down bone. So by utilizing this drug, we're essentially inhibiting the action of osteoclasts and preventing or reducing that bone breakdown. So this is going to end up resulting in increased bone strength and reduced bone resorption. All right, so let's talk about adverse effects a little bit. So skin reactions can happen. You know, obviously that's kind of a natural thing with just about any injection. So that's something to look out for after giving this medication. Muscle aches, muscle pain, soreness, that can happen as an adverse effect from denosumab. Diarrhea has been reported. The one electrolyte that's probably most important to monitor is calcium. So denosumab, as expected, can lower calcium. Remember I said it can also be used in hypercalcemia of malignancy. So paying attention to low calcium levels, patients at risk for low calcium levels, when we add on denosumab, it can drop that further. Couple of situations that I also think about and pay attention to, patients on loop diuretics, because that can bring down calcium levels further, so they may be at greater risk for hypocalcemia. And then renal impairment as well. Patients may be predisposed and a little bit more sensitive to some of those electrolyte changes where the kidney can't kind of alter itself quite as well. So definitely pay attention to calcium levels in the blood. Very, very important, as these can be thrown out of whack a little bit with denosumab, or it can have an additive type effect on hypocalcemia. Osteonecrosis of the jaw. Now, this is something that I did talk about in the Alendronate podcast, so if you want to go listen to that, certainly you can. It is extremely rare, definitely, but there are case reports of this happening with denosumab as well as bisphosphonates. So what I look at and what I think about are patients maybe at higher risk for this situation to happen. And probably the most common situation is anybody that's going to undergo any type of significant dental procedure. So some sort of oral surgery, things like that. Now, like a regular, you know, teeth cleaning with a dentist, that doesn't really meet the criteria of a significant dental procedure. So thinking about surgeries, you know, removal of teeth, you know, extractions, things like that, where we're a little more aggressive, a little more invasive with dental surgeries. That's definitely something that we should think about and should have a discussion with the trained dentist that's going to be, or surgeon that's going to be doing the procedure, as well as the risks of potentially holding or stopping the agent used for osteoporosis. So definitely got to weigh the risks and the benefits of utilizing these agents, these, you know, small but significant risk with osteonecrosis as well. And then lastly, I did want to mention there has been infection risks reported with denosumab. So that is something to think about as we're using this medication. Are we seeing infections such as cellulitis, for example? Are we seeing that associated with its use? And certainly if we are, that's going to be a risk versus benefit discussion with the patient and with your clinical judgment there. Another question that comes up often with osteoporosis medications is, how long do I have to be on this agent? And that is a challenging question, and it's a little bit of a clinical judgment type question. But for those that have had denosumab be indicated for osteoporosis management, typically we're going to want, as long as everything goes smoothly, we're going to want them on that for at least 5 years. And once that 5 years is up, then a risk-benefit calculation should be done to see if we want to continue on. And generally in higher risk patients, maybe that have had multiple fractures, for example, or multiple osteoporosis, osteoporotic fractures, we're probably going to continue it for longer, maybe up to 10 years, for example. So again, going to have to do a risk-benefit. Higher risk patients, generally you might keep them on longer for 5 years. If they're a lower risk patient, depending upon their preference as well, we're going to potentially look at stopping that at 5 years. So again, got to kind of look at that patient and judge for yourself clinically. And the guidelines are a little bit gray as far as how that should go at this point. So it is a little bit more of a clinical judgment type thing. All right, so let's take a quick break from our sponsor and we'll wrap up with drug interactions. If you're in the market for pharmacist board certification study material like BCPS, ambulatory care, geriatrics, BCMTMS, the psychiatric exam, or NAPLEX, go check out meded101.com/store, S-T-O-R-E. We've got a growing list of resources there. We've helped over well into the thousands now of people pass their board exam. So go check that out. Support the sponsor, meded101.com/store. In addition, if you're a nurse, PA, med student, nurse practitioner, go check out meded101.com/store. We've got great books on Amazon, case studies, clinical pearls, drug interactions, all sorts of good stuff that will definitely help you be a better healthcare professional, better clinician. So again, go check out those links, meded101.com/store, and support the sponsor. All right, let's wrap up with drug interactions. So the first thing I wanted to mention was think about that infection risk. So I did mention that is kind of a warning precaution with denosumab use. If that is an issue, certainly adding on or patients already taking immunosuppressive type agents could potentially add to that risk for certain types of infection. So patients taking corticosteroids on a long-term basis, calcineurin inhibitors, even a drug like methotrexate has some immunosuppressant type activity. All these medications could potentially add to that risk of infection. The other thing I wanted to mention certainly was calcium. So if you've got a patient taking a drug that can add on to hypocalcemia effects, adding on denosumab on top of that could kind of pile on and double up that effect. So good examples here, calcimimetics. So that's a drug like cinacalcet, brand name Sensipar there. That can lower calcium certainly and have an additive type effect with denosumab. Another situation, loop diuretics. Loops can lower calcium levels. So using denosumab in combination with a loop diuretic like furosemide, we can significantly increase the risk of hypocalcemia. And then lastly, of course, if we're using denosumab for osteoporosis, we've got to think about medications that would potentially block the potential benefits of denosumab. So drugs that can cause osteoporosis and might oppose the effects of denosumab, corticosteroids, long-term corticosteroid use, higher dosages, that can definitely cause osteoporosis or worsen it. Some seizure medications, phenytoin, phenobarbital, carbamazepine, primidone, those can all have effects on osteoporosis and potentially make it worse. And then one last one I'll mention, I can't say I see it as a big issue in clinical practice, is heparin. Heparin has been associated with osteoporosis. Now, the likelihood that somebody's on longer-term, higher-dose heparin is pretty low, but I did want to mention that it is a potential risk factor for osteoporosis if we're using heparin for an extended period of time. Again, not something I've seen in clinical practice, but I definitely have seen that come up on board exams and pharmacology exams throughout my career. So, with that, I'm going to end the podcast for today. Thank you so much for listening. If you found this episode helpful, leave us a kind rating and review on iTunes. Share us with classmates, colleagues, social media, email, whatever the case may be. Help us grow the podcast, help more individuals and healthcare professionals learn about pharmacology. With that, if you want to track me down, Eric Christensen, PharmD, BCGP, BCPS on LinkedIn, otherwise MedEducation101@gmail.com. And of course, go check out the free resource, the Top 200 Study Guide, at reallifepharmacology.com. All right, I'm going to sign off for today. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.